Here now is the report of the Southern Baptist Education Commission. Here is Raven L. Brantley, Executive Secretary Treasurer.
Mr. President, I would like to present to you a man whom many of you know already, Mr. W. Howard Bramlett, who came with the Education Commission last September.
Dr. Brantley, please forgive this impropriety, but I must remind the messengers that according to Dr. Ellis, the recommendations from the executive committee not considered this morning will be considered after this report. I know you don't take reports very seriously, but you do take recommendations seriously. So please remember this. We have important recommendations following this commission report, and this commission report is important.
I beg your pardon, Dr. Brent.
Thank you. I wanted to present Howard Bramlett to you. Many of you know him already. He's come with the commission to be Director of Placement and Promotion.
Thanks, sir.
Mr. Chairman, somewhere the 15 minutes allotted to the Education Commission has gone with the wind. Apparently, this convention feels that there are other matters more important than education, though I personally cannot see what they are. On June, I'm going to give you back about 8 minutes of this report. I feel that I must say something about the 2-year study which the Education Commission is leading in now. On June 12th, 15th in Nashville, will be held the second National Conference of BEST, Baptist Education Study Task. This will be the last formal meeting of the 2-year study, sponsored by the Commission and strongly backed by the Southern Baptist Convention's Executive Committee. Over 7,000 Southern Baptists in many states have made some direct study of the issues, the problems, and the solutions. It is expected that the findings committee will make its final report around September 15th. It was most appropriate that such a study be held. You will be interested in some of the preliminary thinking that has come as the result of hundreds of people expressing themselves. These are not final, mind you, but are suggestive of what's to come. Here are some of them, and I have numbered them 1, 2, 3 for the purpose of separating them only, not in the order of any importance. First, since church colleges are suspected of being guilty of intellectual dishonesty and unwillingness to permit free proclamation of truth, it behooves us to be doubly cautious to avoid any appearance of these evils for the sake of the gospel. Second, academic freedom is not a special privilege given to professors, but a recognition of their role as witnesses to the truth which they have discovered or examined. As a witness, the integrity of the teacher must not be compromised by rewarding or penalizing him for the content of his testimony. To apply pressure which causes the teacher to say something other than what he believes to be the truth would be as self-defeating as purchasing a fine compass and then bending the needle to make it point where the purchaser wants it to point. The teacher should distinguish clearly between facts, opinions, hypotheses, and interpretations. Third, money contributed by the denomination to the colleges is to be considered mission money. Missions and education historically have been inseparable with Baptists. Education is missions for us. Therefore, denominational contributions to colleges must be considered and treated with the same regard as all other mission contributions. Fourth, the communication gap between the majority of Baptist constituents and the Baptist College is probably the most serious problem facing Baptists and their schools today. Most Baptists think of their colleges as centers of strong religious emphases. They expect the college to evangelize, to indoctrinate, and to make consecrated Christian leaders out of their students. They generally expect the school to uphold the prevailing doctrinal position of the constituents. On the other hand, the college administrations and faculty, while concerned for religious values, do not generally consider their first duty to be evangelism and religious indoctrination. They are first of all concerned for a school with excellent academic standards. They try to help their students find proper religious motivation, but they don't believe they should be expected to do what the home and the church have failed to do in the first 18 years of the student's life. Five, the solutions of the study must face and resolve the question of federal aid so that it will not exist in the minds of the people as a possibility or a threat. Baptists cannot thrive forever with the question of federal aid half open and half closed. Six, the study points out that the colleges are fighting in the front lines of conflict between the old values we cherish and the storm troops of a secular and scientific society, and that rather than having to suffer the poison darts of their own supply lines, the colleges should have the support and the sympathetic concern of their sponsors. Somebody has to be projected out front to be the cutting edge of our denomination's forward thrust and efforts to keep respectable and knowledgeable of the world in which we live. The colleges need the best interest of the people rather than pot shots aimed at them constantly. Your Education Commission is itself experiencing the sensation of being thrust out into the swirling currents of educational thoughts and actions today. We hope the two-year study is a part of a real awakening of Baptists to the job that needs to be done. It is unthinkable that we should cut off our young people at 18 when they are ready to tackle college and say to them that we have nothing further to offer beyond the Sunday school and the training union years of their youth, and that we do not function at all as a denomination in higher education. The important thing, mind you, is not that we supply space for all of our Baptist students, but that we are engaged so far as we can be in higher education in order to be able, as a great faith, to sit in the councils that will determine the direction of this nation tomorrow.